Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness, your host for the week. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. Archives of the show can be found a week after airing at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can contact us with critique or criticism or what have you via email at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net, or send us snail mail at thefinalstraw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This program is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee, located at 610 Haywood Road. Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Some of Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. In this hour, we'll be hearing two perspectives on migrant struggles in the EU, Germany in particular, dating back to roughly 2012. The first we'll hear is Adam Bahar. Adam is an immigrant from Sudan who's currently working on emergency phone networks connecting Coast Guards with immigrants crossing the sea who happen to be in distress. In the second, we will hear from Adam's interviewer, a Berlin-based German-born no-border activist, about their experiences. We tried to cut overlapping information to decrease redundancy, but there was a little of overlap in order to make space for both differing perspectives expressed. Thanks to our buddies affiliated with Anarchistisches Radio Berlin for helping us with setting up these recordings. More content from that project can be found at aradio.blogsport.de. First, a couple of announcements. Here's a wrap-up of prisoner resistance activities this week around the U.S., followed by a few specific prisoner updates. Momentum is growing behind the bars. After two intense rebellions in 4 days at Holman Prison in Atmore, Alabama, last month, things have really heated up. Prisoners in Texas called for and initiated a statewide series of work strikes on April 4th, and the Free Alabama Movement announced a shutdown of ADOC for the month of May, and prisoners across the country announced and called for a nationally coordinated strike and protest this September. Reports from Texas prisoners are still coming in, but at least seven facilities participated enough to get locked down by prison authorities. There have been a lot of threats and harassment by staff reported, but no specific reprisals or people targeted as leaders yet. On Saturday, April 9th, outside supporters gathered for solidarity events across the country, including Austin, Houston, Phoenix, the Bronx, Kansas City, Milwaukee, Providence, Denver, Tucson, Minneapolis, and Fayetteville, Arkansas, as well as a protest at Holman Prison in Alabama by the mothers and families of the Free Alabama Movement. These events were either protests at corporations that profit from prison slavery or workshops and planning sessions about prison slavery and supporting the growing wave of prisoner resistance. Supporters hope to see this tide continue to rise leading up to the September 9th work stoppage, since attention from the outside is essential to protect striking or otherwise rebellious prisoners from violent reprisals. The Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee of the IWW is heavily involved in supporting efforts. You can keep up to date by following their website at iwoc.noblogs.org or by monitoring and signing up for the email list at supportprisonerresistance.net. On Twitter, check out the hashtags supportprisonerresistance and EyesOnTexas. Supporters of Alvaro Luna Hernandez sent this message, quote, "Alvaro is in dire need of immediate practical solidarity from all who support his emancipation from the unjust incarceration and cruel punishment. Alvaro's recent hardship. In the past few weeks, it has come to the attention of the supporters that Alvaro is enduring multiple forms of inadequate and cruel treatment by the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. He is in need of dire medical attention. The TDCJ has placed him in more inhospitable holding conditions. The TDCJ has confiscated and stolen from him. The TDCJ has limited his mail correspondence. And when in transport to Lubbock, Texas, the TDCJ transported him with what you will certainly agree is little to no regard for his health or comfort. Therefore, Alvaro's supporters are urging you to email and call relevant TDCJ authorities by Thursday, April 14th, 2016 at midnight to protest these conditions and demand immediate improvements. More information is at freealvaro.net. In this first interview, Anna Bahar talks about his participation in migrant struggles, including taking part in the public march in 2012 from Würzburg to Berlin, the tent occupation of Oranienplatz in Berlin by 150 migrants for a year and a half, followed by the squatting of an empty school building for organizing and shelter. In German, the word Lager is used as a storage place, sometimes a warehouse, also used for camps or shelters where asylum seekers and refugees are kept isolated from the rest of the German population. Another word that may be difficult for listeners to understand is Adam's phrasing of Guardsee, comparable to Coast Guard. Adam also talked about the cooperation between corrupt African governments and the German government, either in their business of dictatorship or the deportation of Africans back to their continent of origin.
May I ask you to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my name is Adam Bahar. And yeah, I am here in Berlin for 3 years almost, I think, or more. And yeah, I am somehow doing different activities around the topic of refugees. And yeah, I'm also the topic of Sudan and Africa sometimes. And yeah, different activity around this colonial issue and power structure, and new colonialism.
Could you tell me more concretely which kind of work you're doing?
Yeah, sure. As I say, it's different work. Like, for example, one example, I'm doing some activity with Watch Samad alarm phone, for example.
And what is this?
This is like one project exists now for more than 1 year. And mainly, what is happening in Lampedusa in 2014, when this big catastrophe. There's idea come out of different activism that people have to react in this situation. Then the people offer one emergency number. This number is available 24 hours, 7 days in the week. It's for the people who's in distress in the sea to call and try to help them by calling the Guardsee and try to combine all the boat who's calling need to help until they get secure. And this project, somehow I think it is help so much people, as also the thing is somehow the Guardsee in all the border in Europe, somehow sometimes they don't react if the refugees or immigrant people call them, then somehow try to don't take them serious. But after this project, somehow they get kind of trust between the project and the call guard. And somehow after more than 1 year, so people, at least more than 6,000 people or more get secure because of get in touch with alarm phone. Still, this project exists, and yeah, that's, for example, one of the things I do.
And would you also describe something about the refugee movement in Germany?
Yeah, I think I can only say about it some things. I am trying to be part of it from 2012. But somehow this exists for a long time, I think. Some people say from 90s, I don't know. And the main things I was part of it is from 2012, when there's a march from Buzerburg to Berlin. And that comes the idea after 2012, when the guy from Iran, his name, if I remember it now, is Muhammad, I think. Yeah, mm-hmm. Muhammad. Muhammad get letter to deport back to Iran after 2 years. And before one day of his deportation day, he commits suicide in the Lager in Wuzerburg. And then comes the idea of his friend of him to not stay anymore in Lager and try to break this isolation and protest against this situation. And they built the first tent in front of the Lager in Wuzerburg, and then come with contact with different people around, and then people have this idea to make the march from Wuzerburg to Berlin to break this isolation. As the people say, they don't need to live anymore in Lager. And the second thing also, there exists this law of residenzpflicht, and when the people march from Wuzerburg to Berlin, then they break this law, as they somehow they marching and then they crossing all this border of German state that create for refugees. and they get take their freedom of movement in practice. And then also protesting against the deportation as the main reason who may get this guy to kill himself or commit suicide is because he is facing the deportation. That's why also this is like this is the first demand to start the people when they arrive. The march arrived to Berlin in 2012 in October. People start with this demand to stop deportation and close the lager on Polish resident village. And yeah, this is somehow the story of how this begin in 2012. And then it's continue somehow until 2014, until the camp of Oranien Platz get evicted by the Senate and the state of Berlin. Mm-hmm. But I think it is long story. We cannot. It's 2012, 2014, 2 years happening so much things. People demonstrate, making different actions, squatting embassy, demonstrating in the street, squatting houses or place like the old school building in Olofstrasse and all these things. It's like long, big story. Maybe the people can Google uplas.net and get to the website and get more information or thing, because I think we cannot talk about all this story now. Because we need maybe 2 years also to accept.
Yeah. And before, you also said that part of your fight is like a critic or like fighting the colonialism and what remains of it, or is created new by it. And could you tell more about that?
Yeah, I think the main fight have to be against new colonial system and ideology going on, because I think that is maybe the big reason why the people flee now. Also, if they still like somehow now in all the media around or the what is going on, you can hear that the refugees, especially the refugees coming from Africa, somehow they are not so political, or there is no big things make them have to flee and come and stuff like this. But I think the main reason also can be still for a long time, exist until now, is colonial things. That maybe for me, I don't know, for other people, but I believe about that. Because I think the colonial system who make everything now somehow destroy everything in Africa and other countries, maybe also is main reason who make the people now still coming here. Because, for example, here in Berlin, what is happened in on this conference, Congo conference, or call it Berliner conference, who met by this politician in Berlin to discuss after the somehow the European and Western countries, they fed up of war and say, okay, we don't need to fight anymore between each other, but we can, yeah, trying to somehow they put this new ideology of colonial, and then they took Africa like part. They give every part to other country. Like, for example, Sudan. For example, I come from Sudan, and then Sudan, they give Sudan and Egypt and some other country to cross Britain. I don't know. France take some other part and stuff like this. Portugal, Italy take some other part, and in Africa and other country. And I think because of that, until now, all the system in Africa is not working out. If there is problematic in all the situation, socially, economically, everything. Because also I think now we talk English. And that is funny because I have my language, but English also is my colonial language somehow, because, yeah, I have to learn it as Sudan is colonial by Gross Britain. Then the thing is somehow, I think, linked to colonial time, and still until now exists. exist in different way, but not that clear way, but somehow they have deal under the desk with different, and exactly I think what is all the people who have the power in Africa now, all the dictator government is somehow stay in this power position because of Western and European countries. Somehow people cannot believe this somehow, but we experience that as we are living before in Africa. We come back, we come to Europe, we see what's different, we know how the politics there somehow function and how it is here also. And that's why, like, also when we come to UPLAS and we demonstrate and we start this resistance against the law of German, against asylum and against refugees, but also we don't forget that we have to also continue resisting against all colonial new history. And that's why, for example, it was the first action after come to UPLAS after the demonstration, because this was demonstration in 13 of October 2012. That's the first big demonstration after the march arrived. And after that, by 6 days, the first big things started is to squat the Nigerian embassy, as there was big business going on between German and Nigerian embassy, as they deport the people with the deal. They deport the people back to Africa because they say, "Ah, you are coming from that country." They don't care so much which country exactly you come from, and they deport you because of this, and because they get the Nigerian embassy get money and they get this paper to deport you back. Then, and also there is another different things happen after that. For example, also as Sudanese community, we would do some different action against also the cooperation between Sudan and Germany. I can't remember one thing, like in 2013, when the Minister of Affairs of Sudan came to Germany, because Germany offered one day called Business Day to support Sudan, and they give money for the dictatorship.
In this section, Adam talks in more detail about the collaboration with the EU and African nations, known as the Khartoum process, to deport and increase their own border policing, and also the recent refugee deal between Turkey and the EU. Finally, he talks about his view of how Europeans and others inside of Europe can resist and organize against such border policies to create alternatives.
So now you have been telling about actions in, for example, concerning the governments in Sudan and the mm-hmm. implication of the German government or like mm-hmm. other governments in places where people live from, mm-hmm. like for example Sudan. Mm-hmm. Would you like to tell more about?
Yeah, as I say, this one thing is what's happened because of this cooperation between German and Sudan government. As is also, they say that German is a democracy country and they know that Sudan is dictatorship, but they still like supporting in different way. And now it's getting the other way around somehow. Now is also there is more support between Sudan and Germany in different way. Now, especially in the topic of refugees, maybe the people hear about or maybe not what is going on now between the African countries and also the Sudan somehow. And this thing's called Khartoum process. And this Khartoum process is, I can explain it a little bit. I think it's kind of agreement between European EU, the European country, and African country. One of the African countries is Sudan, and also Egypt, Eritrea, and other countries in Africa. The idea behind this Khartoum process is to control the refugees who come from Africa especially, to stop them to don't reach Europe. And the idea started with meeting in Khartoum. That's why they call it Khartoum process. Khartoum is the capital of Sudan somehow. And they have this agreement that they support the African, or especially the Sudan government, and they already start. They give them 100 million euro now. The idea is also to training the police, the Sudanese police, to control more the borders, and also to install somehow new device of control, like electronic device and cameras and stuff to control. And also the things also they try somehow to build the same system here. Who is going on now here in Sudan, for example, they start already building this kind of laga, this haim for the people to stop the people from there, and then brought them to the laga, and then from there to deport them back to their country. Then somehow the system...
Within the state of Sudan?
Yeah, within the state of Sudan, because, for example, all the people who come from Africa, for example, to reach Europe, they will come by Sudan, and from Sudan they can go to Libya, and then from Libya continue to come to Europe. Then the idea is to stop the people from there before they come. And they have this agreement already, they signed it, and now they're starting to put it in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's one of the really things people have to also ask themselves about it, how is European democracies, blah, blah, blah. They try to support country like... Yeah, they're supporting some country, like real dictators' country.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there are also other examples, no? Like already, like the European governments, they did these treatments with other states. Like for example, with Morocco, they have like a big, big economic exchange. Like they give Morocco money, so they reinforce their.
Yeah.
Their borders, and like also
accepting the people to deport the people back from Morocco, and yeah, this is also new deal with Turkey.
Yeah.
And they're already starting now. Yesterday it was the first deportations, official deportation by Frontex to Turkey. That happened yesterday morning.
From Greece?
From Greece to Turkey. They deport 131 refugees, almost of them from Bangladesh and other countries, but also among them there's two Syrian refugees. And the deal is like they deport everyone who enter Greece illegally, they say. And Turkey, because they get this 3 million euro, they will accept the people, and they now they declare somehow Turkey as third safe country. As it's also crazy, as Turkey is also not safe, it's still people, the Turkey government fighting the Kurdish people in different places. But yeah, this is a European new democracy, justice, blah, 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 things.
And could you explain what it means, like the safe third country?
Yeah, the safe third country, that the meaning that for it is like, for example, Turkey is a country can the people apply asylum in it and stay in it. Like if they come from country when there's war or problem they have, then they can stay in Turkey as there is no problem there and people live already there.
Mm.
But that's not true, because the thing is about refugees' right is about if the people really have a right to stay there, to work and have their own life. And I think that's not exist for the people there, because already also the Turkish somehow government is dictator somehow. And people can see that how they deal with the press. and how they deal also with the Kurdish people who are asking for freedom and their own country and stuff. Then it's more really like people who come from war, from Syria, from different other countries, and then they stuck again in dictator's country because Europe, they don't need them. And so Europe somehow pays this money for Turkey to keep the people. Then it's kind of really dirty deal, but yeah, people need to do something against it, but it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this stuff to continue to do something against it.
And how you think resistance against this could be, for example, in this like Western or European countries?
Yeah, I think that's the main problem. A good question. That I think the main problem is how to let the people who living inside Europe to resist against their own system. I think it's difficult because somehow all the people profit somehow from the system, then they don't need to destroy the system. And maybe also the second things, we don't have alternative. We don't say like, okay, we always say, we are against the system, we don't need this capitalism system. But we don't offer any other alternative, I think. If you ask anyone who says the system have to be destroyed, what the alternative is, there is no alternative. And then the normal citizens, they are afraid that what they have now, the nice car, nice things, blah, 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 they cannot get it anymore. And then they will be controlled by politicians because of this. But I think it is... anyway, for me, I don't think that the refugees, they have to change the system. I think the society or the citizen of Europe, this is their problem to change it as their system. Like, we know we come from Africa, for example. We know we have dictatorship. We never say we are coming from democracy. But we come here, we say, the people say there is democracy, but there is no real democracy. Then, and I think anyway, if there is democracy, talk about it, is at least in German, what I understand is like the population, the citizen, vote for some people, some party, some politician, and then they will be in the power position, making law, making everything, and controlling the country. But then the thing is, there is no... When they do something wrong, they don't talk to them and think that's the wrong things. If there is real democracy, they have to say, we don't accept this, what you do is wrong, and they have to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's say a small example, like... Yeah, let's say capitalism example. Like, if you have your company, and in your company, you somehow employed some people, and these people who work in your company, they don't work good, and every time you lose money and you lose so much things, then it's clear that you will kick them out. You don't need them anymore because you don't need to lose.
Yeah.
And that's how it has to be done. And I think that's what has to be done. People have to see that if really now, because somehow the system is capitalism, people can think about this example and see how they can kick out all these bad politicians who don't run the country or run the EU in good way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is there something else you would like to tell to the audience of the radio?
I think I am not so professional to tell people what they can do, but I think I hope the people try to think about way to organize themselves, because I think what we need to do to change something first, we need to organize ourselves. And organizing ourselves not means that to be like belong to big things, but try to organize yourself with your neighbors, with your, I don't know, slowly until you will get somehow to be part of changing somehow, because the change will come anyway. I don't think what is going on now in the world is really everywhere is war, people die, people flee, they get deported, get problems. Somehow all this problem will not, the world will not continue like this. They have to be changed somehow. And I think it makes sense for people to be ready and organize themselves and be part of the change after. Then it's good to be somehow organized in different way, and also good to be informed yourself from the people. I mean, like, They're all media now talking about how it was going on, and big part of it is not true because they only bring what politician and what party in power needs. And I think it's also good to try to figure out another channel for get your information from the real people who is affecting by the things, and inform yourself in different way and try to be ready because the change will come.
Okay, thanks a lot for your time and
your
thoughts, your words.
You're welcome.
Okay.
This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. We just heard Adam Bahar, a Sudanese migrant activist living in Berlin, about his experiences and views on border policies and economics and their impacts on the lives and bodies of refugees. Next, we'll hear from some of the experiences of a German-born anti-border activist talking about their experiences with migrant struggle in Berlin and on the Greek and Macedonian border recently. A full version of this interview will be linked from our blog post for this episode and available for download.
We are hoping to have a conversation about the so-called refugee crisis in Europe with activists from here. Would you mind introducing yourself and maybe talking about your experience around the refugee circumstances?
Yeah, like I'm activist in Berlin. I've been like part of different like more individual supporting groups, which I think it's like something you can find a lot now around, which means like that individuals try to apply for asylum, and then like a group forms to support or go with this person through this process, and maybe also to find other solutions if the asylum is not, or like it's probably that it's going to be like a negative decision to it, and like to try to organize money for the process and for the lawyer and all this stuff, which is like really connected to a lot of parties, or like somehow Berlin is known for the soli parties, mm-hmm. to organize money, I don't know. They squatted also an old school building and used it for living and like also for organizing themselves and like to try to discuss. And in the beginning there was like a lot of times plenum or like a meeting, like a general meeting to talk about, okay, how can we fight against the asylum system, which is like really discriminating and like not giving any rights to the people. Like, for example, that the people don't get money, but they get like this
voucher.
Yeah, a voucher.
Or a coupon.
Yeah. For food, and they can't really, and for food and clothes, and they, for example, can't use it to pay a lawyer, which is like essential because here, even if you have some possibilities to get asylum, if you don't have a lawyer, it's really small possibility to get it. Yeah, they were also fighting against this restrictive law, so you should just, like, you have the possibility to move around 30 kilometers, more or less, from the place where you registered. And also, like, against this registration with the Eurodac system, that you need to give your fingerprint, and if you then try to apply for asylum in another state, you will be sent back. It's like part of a treatment, like the Schengen treatment.
So just to realize, so the border region that encompasses the majority of the European Union is called the Schengen Zone, and the setup between different states is that the peripheral states, the states on the outside, which tend to be the contact point for people that are seeking asylum, are also the points where a refugee would more likely come in contact with law enforcement for sleeping out of doors or for stealing for food or just being noticed by the police because mm-hmm. of the color of their skin and being picked up, right? And so after that point, if someone were to make it up to a richer, like Northern European country or Central European country, if they've been documented as having come into contact in another state, Frontex would share this information, the security agency, and would deport them back to that country of contact. Is that right?
Yeah, more or less. It's not really Frontex, okay. Which is like checking the fingerprints, for example. It's like it is the states, or like the institutions working in the states, like the foreign ministries.
Okay.
And that, for example, now I read the act from a friend who got a negative decision, and like in his file there was also the contact of the person who was asking if the other country could take him back. And it was just written, sent back to there. It was a good. It's like, this is like really, really clear that it's also, for example, now there's like this new decision from the a meeting in Brussels from different governments, where they really like exactly try to solve this refugee crisis from now, and like try to, or like there was an agreement that Turkey will get a lot of money, and now like for each person send it back from Greece to Turkey, one person can legally enter this Schengen room or like Schengen space and like get asylum, which is also there. It's like really disgusting to see how it's like treated as goods, humans who have like the need to get a place and a place where they can stay safe, and because like, yeah, it's clear that people are fleeing or like need to go away from the place where they left.
To go back to when the people were squatting the park for about a year, will you talk a little bit about resistance that people came up against and how people in Berlin defended them? Like, I heard a bit about how fascists would attack the park or stuff like that. Will you talk a little bit about that?
In the beginning of the squatting of the park, there were like night shifts or like shifts the whole time. There was like an info tent where people could also come to ask for a sleeping place and without like outside of the tents or stuff like that. And there was also like security shifts, like turning around the park and then like having a structure they could mobilize so people would arrive. But actually, I, like, as far as I remember, there were not so many attacks. And, like, most of them happened more, like, in the end, when already quite a lot of people left. Yeah, there was, like, the squatting, and then this whole time the people stayed there, and there already was, like, the Senate, or, like, the government of the district, I don't really know how to call it. They were, like, trying to have negotiations with the people so they would leave, and like trying to offer them places in the Lager, which is like the camps where they're stored somehow. And like also trying to make deals about clothes and stuff. And then like in some moment, I'm a little bit going away from the question, but I will try to come back. then in some moment there was like a little bit hidden deal with a part of the people being in the Oplatz or being in that place, which was exactly about that they would get like a positive decision or like, no, a positive willing proof of their asylum seeking again. And yeah, that they would get a place in a hostel for some time and they would get money for clothes and stuff like that. And then actually this group somehow started to evict that place, and the police was standing next to it like, ha ha ha, okay, wow. You're like really...
This one group of immigrants started evicting the other one because they got privileged treatment.
Yeah, and that was like really after the idea of divorce and or like divide and rule. Really, really hardcore to see it. But after other fight, like of one person and one activist, she got like she climbed into a tree and she denied of going down from the tree for I think a week, even like to force that one tent, like the reunion tent, could go back to the Oplatz, as like to still keep it as a political place and not like a place for living, but like as a political place to have the possibility of a statement, like a constant statement. And then there was like this pavilion, which was part of an exposition in one moment, and that pavilion, for example, got burned. But it was happening in the night when like and like destroyed also sometimes, or like the info tent too. But normally then it was already when nobody was there in that moment, so somehow it was not really a reaction directly to it, but then like more, I think. Most of the focus then, like in this like later time, was doing the bigger demonstrations, but not as like a direct reaction.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but for example, also now there are like a lot of shelters, like, I don't know, in German there's this word Lager, which is somehow camp, but it also Lagern as a verb means to store, mm-hmm. and also people use it as a, like a political term, that they feel they are stored in these mm-hmm. places and it's not a home for them. And there are like a lot of Lager also built up new in Berlin now. And there are some attacks and like more and more attacks from or like on whole Germany that are built up, and there are also a lot of attacks from fascists to this Lager. Mm-hmm. Also with Molotov cocktails and like stuff like that, like really hardcore. And there's like more people organizing than going there, trying to make a security before mm-hmm. it and like trying to somehow bring a protection. Mm-hmm. It's so much that there's a lack of real good organization for it.
Can you talk about the closing of the borders and what you've seen around the borders since you've been doing this sort of like support work outside of Germany?
What I've seen, actually, it's not so much because I didn't really stay close to the border, like just really shortly in Idomeni. And there's like, yeah, you see that people are standing really close to this fence and can't cross it. And there was like one moment where there was a leaflet appeared and like a call out for people to cross, and it was really shit situation.
That was over the river at the border of Macedonia and Greece.
Yeah.
A few people died in that.
Yeah, like three people died. And it's like, there also, it was like signed with a committee in Norbert Blüm. And Norbert Blüm is a CDU politician who visited the camp like 2 days before this March of Hope, how this like march through the border was called. And I think this is like, because it's interesting, this signature, because like he visited the camp. I know he's not, I'm not really sure if he's from CDU or from FDP, but it's like the FDP, I think he's from FDP actually. It's like the liberal party, which is also somehow fighting for the rights of migrants to come here to work and like for more working permissions. And he was like really like trying to say, yeah, no, I'm like suffering with you, but also like, yeah, okay, for one night in this tent, come on, what the f-? And yeah, I don't know, I think it's interesting to sign a leaflet like that somehow. But all in all, it was like super situation because the people were told they should like cross a dry river, and the river was super full and super strong. So it was, yeah. But about like the closure of the borders, like most of my experiences from things I heard, because my experience myself was that I can pass through with my passport. And like I was traveling with a friend who has like the right to stay here in Germany, but he has an like Tunisian passport. And it was really interesting to see also the difference, how we were treated and how the passports were treated, which is like super clear. Ah, no, okay, it's not a German passport, so yeah, come on, let's check it. And then, yeah, the cars also get checked really strongly, but it's more because of drugs and not at least what they say, but also our cars were too small to really hide people. But what I heard is like, for example, that people who were like organizing a protest in Idomeni, this is one news somehow, that two people were let through, and one of them was one of like kind of a leader of a protest, or at least he was caught like that, and they were let through the border between Greece and Macedonia, and then arriving to Macedonia they were completely beaten up with electric shocks and stuff like that, really really hardcore, and pushed back. And that's like what I also heard from most of the people who were trying to cross the border, that some of them they can get through until Macedonia, for example, but then they got, in the moment they meet police or militaries, they completely get beaten up and pushed back. And for example, also in the north of Macedonia now, there's like a camp, like in the border to Serbia, where people also tried to cross the border to Serbia. They got pushed back, but were not accepted anymore in Macedonia. Mm-hmm. So they're like now no state land. Nobody is like really taking care. Just sometimes you hear that the Macedonian police is pushing them again to Serbia is pushing them back, and like in this circle of nothing. And this is also what a friend told me, who walked that road, that the same thing happened to her between Greece and Macedonia. And it's like really this not taking responsibility of human beings, but it's, yeah. You can see it in a lot of different situations and states, no?
Yeah. Speaking of responsibility, and outside of the whole, the responsibility of one human being to take care of another, or at least not to put them in a situation where they're, you know, being beaten up or like shuffled around like a commodity or whatever. As a German, have you heard any sort of, or made any sort of connection through communicating with people who are trying to escape from the wars that are ongoing about the relationship that the state that you live under has to the insecurities that have driven people across those borders to seek sanctuary?
Yeah, like, I don't know, one thing I have clearly in mind in that is, yeah, one friend with whom I was talking about Chad and Sudan, and he just showed me pictures of the cars, like, which the first are, like, no, the military forces were driving, and so, like, Mercedes, and, like, yeah, I don't know, German cars, and also it's, like, clear that there are German weapons, for example, and I think it's, like, the implication of the states, like, of the richer Western states is super, super clear and overall and, like, concerning weapons and, like, this hardware for the war. Then I think the rest is not something what people, like, exactly told me, but it's, like, more things I think about or I read in other places or some stuff like that. I think, yeah, for example, now there's a lot of propaganda in the streets for the Bundeswehr, like the German military. And it's always like if you try to discuss with some of these idiots, it's like, yeah, no, we are just building fountains or like this water.
Like wells or whatever, yeah. Like water access points.
Yeah, and I think this is also something what you can clearly hear from people who are leaving the places where they grow up. It's, yeah, okay, people come, destroy our places, and they, like, don't bring anything good, and they are still colonizing our, like, homes. I don't know, you hear about police forces getting trained by German police and, like, German military and stuff like that.
So a few days ago there was at least a series of rallies at the same time that had different meeting points around the refugee and migrant situation in Berlin. And it, from what I heard, it got a bit tense with people that were against allowing migrants in to Germany or to stay. What's your impression about right-wing organizing and also the general population of Berlin or of Germany in terms of the migrant situation? Around Christmas time, there was a lot of stuff in the international media and the BBC and other sources about a lot of people in Germany opening up their houses and making space for families. Has that shifted, or is it just the spin shifted? Mm.
That's really interesting to see also the influence of the mainstream media, and because for like in summer or in someone when the borders got like more opened and Germany said no, yeah, we're gonna accept a lot of people, you saw a lot of pictures in the media and like you really had the feeling that a lot of people are like, yeah, okay, I'm so solidary with the people coming. And like, yeah, people offering a lot of clothes, like a little bit in this charity mentality, and like also people thinking about shelters or like giving home to people and stuff like that. And I can, like, in Christmas I didn't really figure it out, but I can imagine it's like the time for this. So, you know. But then afterwards in like New Year's Eve there were like also, there was like this discourse about it's like this sexual harassment in Cologne and also in Hamburg and different places, that it was said, yeah, there were groups of certain people, like northern Arabic people looking, who were like trying to rob people and like abusing women and all this. And, like a lot of denounces in the police too. And then the whole discourse started about, yeah, this like sexist migrants who need to learn about gender equality and blah, 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 which is like a big bull because like, okay, and afterwards also there started a lot of contra discourse saying, hey, sexism is not something imported, it's existing here as well a lot, and we don't need to look so far to see it and feel the need to fight against it. And you, like the government or like the public media, like the mainstream media, they never lose a word about it, but just now, if you can like somehow use it in a racist way, they, it's like suddenly a super important issue. And I think there a really interesting point is that shortly afterwards there was a change in the asylum law that people who commit a crime, they can be deported way easier. So it's also, you see how the discourse is like used for the politics. And I think there also the public opinion changed a lot again, like in a more racist or like closing way. But even though already for a long time it's getting worse and worse and worse with the organizations who are like, for example, if a new lager should be opened, like these shelters, there are like neighborhood initiatives organizing to try to avoid it, like to stop the process for it, and like making a lot of racist propaganda. In the moment I feel like the people, it's somehow like separating, that one part of the people is like getting more and more racist in a like also stronger way, and one part maybe is like trying to open their minds and like being in solidarity with people who are fleeing or migrating. But I think it's also really concentrated on this. Yeah, there's war in the places, so they need to flee, but there's like still no right for free movement. And like, for example, that I can decide I live in Senegal because I like, because it's warm, I don't know. It's my right, but it's not your right of a Senegal person to come here because here it's cold, you know, like, I don't know.
The last month has seen the electorate in Germany increase support for this new protest party called Alternative for Deutschland, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about what they've said and what might be the implications of... or what their platform is?
There you get me.
So it's kind of Trumpy, it sounds like a deport them all sort of perspective is what I've heard.
Yeah, I think there I'm really like, it's a point where I need to, where I want to inform more myself. Yeah, because I think it's, somehow they had also the division in within themselves. Because one part of them was too obviously racist, and the other part still wants to like keep this liberal democratic face. But yeah, there were people like overall after the situation or the discourse in Cologne saying, yeah, just shoot them, which is like something you say, what?
Just shoot them?
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, it's something... Here it's not so normal as maybe you hear, at least it's like somehow you hear from United States, everybody wears a weapon. This is not really like a normal feeling. And then it's like a statement like, just shoot them from politicians in the media. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You can say it like that without, I don't know. And it's like going in a really, really also way where you think how this can happen in a state which is still called democratic, no? And I think there, like, one point is that more and more people, like now there were, like, the elections and they in some parts of Germany. And in one place they got, like, 24% in the parliament, and it's, like, the third strongest party. And it's, like, really, really a lot. And I'm really curious, like, about how it will be in the elections in Berlin, too. Because I think this is, like, a party which also people will elect who maybe would tell you, no, I'm not racist. Or I just don't want people to come here to work here who have not the right. But for sure, a Syrian person can come, maybe, if it's not like a man who rapes my family, I don't know. Yeah, I think this is a lot of times this this demonstration or this march you were mentioning before, it was called Safety Instead of Fear. And it's like a lot of times this discourse about, yeah, we need to take care about our women and our children, because if migrants are living in the area, they are not safe anymore.
It's so dangerous when, like, discourses of sexual assault are being used to justify xenophobia and being used to justify bigotry and racism and all these things, because it's not actually about sexual assault. It's not about, like, protecting people. It's about justifying bigotry, you know, and it's so dangerous.
Yeah, and there was also one statement from one person to this, which was saying, yeah, if you use this as like an justification to for xenophobia, mm-hmm. you are like being sexist twice to me, no? Because first it's happening in the moment of like somebody's being sexist with me, and then it's the moment when you're using me for your discourse. And it's like, yeah, I think this is really, really clear. And even though I don't want to say it's not true what the persons who say they were abused are saying, no, this is also really important, and I think this is also a really complicated situation where you're in then, like, to say, okay, you lived what you lived, and it's all your right to want something to happen because of that. Yeah, and I think also this abuse of sexism is also a really, really old story, no? Like this taking care about women or children.
Yeah. It also presupposes that, like, women and children are ours to defend, which, like, yeah. is just patriarchal and paternalistic and all these things.
I don't know, like, the whole time I'm wondering a little bit about this question, like, how I can see the implication of the government, also of me and myself, of my neighbors, of the state where I'm living, in places where people are fleeing. And somehow I don't really find an answer right now. But I think also it's, yeah, for sure, a really important point is also the economic situation. And there's like, if you're, yeah, see how the globalization or like economic is developing. It's clear that it's also, yeah, Western governments or like Germany or maybe also United States, they're really responsible for the situation of poorer countries and the situation that people need to go because they just can't eat anymore, like be alimentated or alimentate families and stuff. And I think there's like, again, to have this conscience, which is maybe also okay, how can this process be changed? I think it's like a big other discussion.
Definitely.
But an important one. And I think it's also, yeah, one point, like how, or maybe like a little bit this super naive question, what would happen if there would be war here, for example, and I would need to flee? How would I feel if I would be treated like people are treated here, for example? And like this feeling also that, I don't know, the privileges, I think it's a big, big part of it too, that I can go everywhere where I want without like big problems. But in a lot of places, even without really needing a visa, for example.
Thank you for taking the time to share your experiences and thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Really appreciate it.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you for your questions, too, and for the interest to share.
You've been listening to William and my interview with a German-born anti-border activist about their experiences at the Macedonian and Greek border, and also with the migrant struggle and emergencies in Germany and the EU. Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness, your host for the week. This program is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee, located at 610 Haywood Road. Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Some of Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop.